Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Well, hello, Diana Frake here. I am the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thanks for joining us today. Very quick, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, HiQ, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness industry. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call. Let's talk. And you can find more information about us or contact at retail-voodoo.com or email info@retailvoodoo.com to learn more. Yeah. How many times have I said that, guys? Right. Okay. Well, today we get to meet Miss Sydney Chasen. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
All right. The founder of Chasen Dreams Farm, a new snack brand made from teeny tiny pop sorghum. It's so cute and very yummy. Made with US grown sorghum. This is a drought resistant and regeneratively farmed crop that is naturally gluten free, and which means it's as good for you as it is for the planet. Well, hello, Miss Sydney. How are you today?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, where are you today?
I am in Pacific Beach, San Diego.
Oh, and are you guys still warm right now?
I swear winter came. Like, the last few days have been so cold, and it's like, hopefully our San Diego only season lasts a week.
Oh my goodness. Well, what's winter in San Diego? Is it 82?
No, it gets chilly. It's like, really? It's like high 60s.
Really?
Low 70s. Yeah.
Okay. I would not, I should probably know better, but especially being on the coast, we tend to have a little bit more seasonal impact, not like the Northeast or the central Midwest or anything, but yeah, for sure.
Well, I lived in Scotland for 4 years, so I think I paid my rainy weather dues. I deserve this weather.
You deserve this weather. I think a lot of people feel like they deserve that weather.
They do.
Well, so thanks so much for being on the show. Listen, let's talk a little bit about Chasen Dreams Farm. I always like everybody to kind of tell a little backstory of why does it exist? What is Chasen Dreams Farm? What is the product and why do you exist?
Sure. So I'll start off with kind of the name and then who we are. So I grew up on Chasen Dreams Farm, which was the Chasen family farm. It was a farm in a tiny town of 150 people, and it was just a really magical, innovative place. My mother was an artist. My father was like a race car driving software engineer, like very creative, innovative household. And for me, it was a really magical place that inspired innovation and creativity from the simplest things on the farm. So I've always been into different entrepreneurial projects and creative things. So kind of natural that upon graduating college that I started the business. So Chasen Dreams Farm, we are a snack brand platform creatively crafting humble ingredients. We believe that delicious and indulgent snacks are packed full of not so great ingredients, genetically modified corn, corn syrup, artificial flavors. And on the other side of things, on the complete other side of the spectrum, better for you is often perceived as boring, bland, lacking taste appeal, and a compromise. And it doesn't have to be that way. So we're creating better for you, more fun for you, clean label snacks, taking a page out of conventional foods playbook of making a really high energy, vibrant brand while keeping a clean ingredient deck. The product that we have is a popped sorghum snack. Like you mentioned, looks like super teeny tiny popcorn, mm-hmm. but entirely corn-free. And it's made with U.S. grown sorghum, which is just a really incredible underutilized crop that, like you said, naturally gluten-free, unlike 92% of U.S. corn, has mm-hmm. never been genetically modified and mm-hmm. super sustainable. So we believe that this amazing grain of the past that's 10,000 years old has mm-hmm. a real opportunity to help with the future of food security because of its that is able to be regeneratively farmed, and it's a drought resilient crop requiring no irrigation mm-hmm. in some of the driest parts of the country.
And so that's a really great, because I know this concept of regenerative farming, like, so talk a little bit more just for briefly about sorghum. When I think of regenerative now, as I've been talking with people who plant hemp and also sunflowers, these are plants that put into the ground as much as they pull out. Sometimes they're even producing more output than they require. Is this kind of like sorghum as well?
Yeah, exactly that. So it captures harmful carbon, stores it safely in the soil. So instead of taking away from the earth, it's actually giving back.
So I believe there's a little bit more, if I remember correctly, the sorghum product was developed also for celiac reasons. Is that right? Is there some connection there with celiac disease or intolerance?
Yes. So I have been gluten-free since I was 7 years old, mm-hmm. well before gluten-free is what gluten-free is today. Mm-hmm. And on the farm, my mother and I were always like creating and crafting new products and interesting things out of alternative ingredients. And yes, it was fun and enjoyable, but it was really out of necessity at the time. Like,
okay,
if you ate a piece of bread, it bounced. It was really, really gross.
And there's I remember.
New players and the products that were available, because there wasn't a huge amount of demand, had a crazy, crazy long shelf life because it sat on the shelves for forever.
There was no velocity.
Correct. So, I mean, oftentimes I just wasn't eating like bread and pasta because it was so awful. So, you know, I grew up on a farm surrounded by lots of corn and soy fields. A lot of farmers were also growing sorghum. So I've been aware of sorghum my whole life, but it's really through like being 7 years old in the kitchen with my mother and creating blends with sorghum and rice flour and tapioca starch and what we now do in an R&D kitchen, I was doing when I was under 10 years old.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a little science experiment.
Science experiment. I think when I think of entrepreneurs in this space, I know there's a lot of that inquisitiveness and entrepreneurialness that showed up in the early stages of their life that was just then really, though, was manifested by the environment that they were growing up in. Not everybody's quite that lucky that they had that magical experience that you had with your mother and father being the types of people who they are. So really, what a special way to grow up, I should say.
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate that both of them were always involved in entrepreneurial things. And, you know, I have founder friends where it's like, oh, my parents think I'm crazy. And I'm like, we all are a little crazy doing this. But I am so fortunate that they are like my biggest cheerleaders and support it through the ups and downs.
Well, I want to go back before Chasing Dreams Farm. One of the things that we discussed was kind of a moment of clarity and a decision making point in time right around graduation. And I want to just kind of go on record. You are one of the younger entrepreneurs that I've had on this show. And I really am excited to have you on simply because I think innovation should not be limited to those that have lots of experience or limited experience. And part of this show's ability is to just demonstrate that leadership comes at every stage in life. And some of us, like yourself, are lucky to find and realize that moment and opportunity earlier. So I thank you for being brave so early on. I love it.
Thank you.
But I want to talk about that moment that you discussed to me, or was it really a moment, but it was a series of moments that had you go from deciding a corporate life versus this entrepreneurial life. Can you describe that for us?
So I graduated college from Edinburgh Napier University in Scotland. And when I was graduating college, I had an email for an ideas competition come through. And this wasn't a startup competition.
Okay.
It was like just trying to get people to think entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. So I had entered this concept that I was in Scotland. So I said, this haggis eating, whiskey sipping, beer drinking culture needs a wonder ring to change their lives. Which, like, in hindsight, I'm not sure that that was like the most PC thing, nice thing to say about their culture, but won 100 pounds of funding at the time.
And wow.
I know, it's about $120, $130. But that's what got it started.
Oh, really?
But it was the final semester. And I was applying for corporate roles. Like, this was like a fun little procrastination tactic for writing my dissertation. So I was applying to lots of corporate roles. My degree was in financial services. So I knew I didn't want to like properly be in financial services, but I wanted to do something that touched it. So I was looking for jobs in sales and recruitment, whether it was like investment analytics or I was in the UK. So recruiting for jobs in Canary Wharf, something there. And I went down to London and I had two interviews, and one said, my CV shows that I'm not financially motivated. And the other one said, my body language showed that I was put off by the idea of working hard.
Huh.
Pick me apart in a million and one different ways. I am flawed all over the place.
Right.
Those are not the two things that anyone should pick up on.
No.
And it was just a moment of like, oh my God, these people sat down with me for 30 minutes or an hour. And like, I can't prove myself there. Is this what the corporate world is like? Mm-hmm. And I was like, really, like, what forced me to get going and started was out of spite. I got on a train back, like London to Edinburgh, and I wrote to the business center and I said, so, you know, I entered that competition. I know you mentioned something about like a business incubator. Like, how do I start this? Because I can't do this. And wow. I'm fortunate that I didn't get deep into that career or anything. And it was like gut feeling, intuition, everything mm-hmm. was like, this isn't for me. And mm-hmm. I started on my merry way.
So that's so interesting and quite powerful, because I think there's a lot of humans, not just women, but there are a lot of people that they go through school and they feel obligated to continue down a path because of the degree or commitments that they made to family members or whatever. And it's, I think there's something to be said for recognizing when knowing that your path is not the path that you've laid out in front of you is not the right path, but not to think that a deviation is a complete dismissal of all of your education. I am sure 100% that maybe not all of the facts that you learned in school, but the commitment to getting work done and working in teams and everything that you did in school has been mostly translatable to what you're doing now.
Yeah, I completely agree. I always say like the biggest thing that I learned in college was how to do the stuff that I absolutely hate doing.
Yeah. How to learn.
A skill. Yes. How to learn how to push through the hard times. And the university I went to was hugely international. Mm-hmm. So it was actually a really great experience being on so many team projects with people from all different backgrounds, different languages, cultural barriers. And I actually think a lot of who I am as a leader today has to do with mm-hmm. being part of those projects. And I think also having this negative experience my micro attempt into the corporate world mm-hmm. actually like influenced how I hire a team, how I lead a team, because very, very quickly I clocked on to how I do not want to be as a leader. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So in this little incubator, school incubator, because we're going to talk about another one here in just a moment, or accelerator, is that where Chasing Dreams Farm was birthed from, or was that just kind of the stepping stool to toward it?
It was a stepping stool. Like, it started very much in slow motion, developing the concept, realized pop sorghum is a lot more difficult to pop than popcorn. So it was like slow motion development. I was working a restaurant job when I was in Edinburgh. Then I was also, I had a enterprise fellowship that like was like to commercialize my innovation. It was like all life science people and me and my little micro popcorn idea. But it was, it took a little bit of time to like kind of like organize thoughts and the concept. And then when I moved back to the US, that's when we properly started building the company.
Gotcha. And was sorghum, did sorghum find you or did you seek it out, if that makes any sense?
Did sorghum find me?
Yeah. Meaning like, were you looking for, were you looking to create a brand and you weren't quite sure what exactly was it was that you wanted to do, or had you known about sorghum, pop sorghum, and you knew you wanted to turn that into something?
I see what you're saying. So yes, it was sorghum first. Gotcha. And then it's become so heavily brand. So
gotcha.
It started as this concept of like commercializing this ancient grain, sorghum heavy, everything.
Got it.
But we are now sorghum is one part of our story, but like who we are as a brand is like far more about inspiring innovation and creativity, and having really fun, quirky products that taste good and people love that we call our snackventions. And oh, by the way, we've got this amazing ingredient that's delivering on our promises.
Love it. Love it. So you're back in the States, you start pressing the gas. Some things happen, and then an opportunity to work with Mondelez, the Mondelez Accelerator came up. Tell us, how did you get introduced to the program and how did it go for you?
Yeah. So, incorporated the company in 2018 and started building it in the US. And then we kind of did the traditional, we were in a commercial kitchen, and then we scaled up production a little further. And then this pandemic dropped in the middle of all of our plans, which delayed a lot of things. So we really properly launched Chase and Dreams Farm in February this year. We were
of 2021.
Yes. And we were previously under the Lil Pops brand. So we did a rebrand in our 2020 hunker down. We're going to figure this out. But yeah, so this summer we were on Mondelez International's co-led by Snack Futures Accelerator. And we didn't have an introduction to Mondelez before. It was a cold application.
Oh.
Our food scientist used to work for Mondelez, had sent the link over. He's like, you tick a lot of these boxes. And I totally did not think that we were going to get it. We're an early stage brand, and was accepted onto the program as one of nine snack food brands that are, what do they say? Good for people, kind to the planet, and deliciously fun. And
yes.
That's very much who we are. So it worked perfectly. And it was an amazing, amazing experience. Pretty intense program for 12 weeks this summer, where we had like proper curriculum 4 days a week. We also had a mentor within Mondelez, Buddy, which was a mentor within Snack Futures. And the biggest value that we got, which was super cool, was access to all Mondelez talent. So they were the gatekeepers. So if we had a food science question, a manufacturing question, a packaging material question, brand, like anything, we would be connected to the people who manage Oreo's brand and Triscuit's R&D. And
yes.
I mean, the most like expert niche talent like in the world.
That's so fantastic. Now, were you working with Bridget Wolf on her and her part of the org?
Yeah, so she's the head of Snack Futures.
Yes.
And Snack Futures is who put on the Collab Accelerator within Mondelez. So
right.
We worked very closely with Bridget.
Okay. I interviewed her for the podcast last year at this time, and she was talking about this kind of in code, not really in code. It was something that she was starting to put together or midstream putting together. And her desire to really push Mondelez and the snacking category in general into a broader based health and wellness type of category, kind of like in the grand scheme of things, there not everybody's going to eat kale chips, not everybody's going to eat Cheetos, but there's 90% of the people are in the middle, kind of building that path along the way. Yeah. She's really a huge fan of that normalizing healthy snacking. So what a wonderful experience. She is one smart person.
She is a force. Like,
yes, she is
so magnificent. And we've learned so much from her and her Snack Futures team.
Yes.
And what's been such like a breath of fresh air is, as a startup emerging brand in the better for you space, we're like, we don't like big food. Big food is, we're anti big food.
Yes.
And like, so remarkably pleasantly surprised,
right,
how many amazing initiatives are happening.
Yes.
Within there.
Behind the scenes that people don't see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, we're like, oh, they're, you know, big food, nobody's going to be innovative or anything. And like, not just the Snack Futures team, but the Mondelez team as mm-hmm. well are mm-hmm. like super creative and innovative and so excited about mm-hmm. working with and helping like the next generation of snacking.
That's really awesome. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who, to prepare for something like this? Let's say you're talking to a counterpart out in the market and they're looking at moving into this program. Like, what would you say to be prepared for entering into a program like this?
I think be so open to new ideas and learning. And, you know, I think we always think of like being open to new ideas in the like product innovation, but we learn to challenge the status quo in everything, like mm-hmm. route to market, marketing strategy, PR messaging, things that like are not just, okay, we're doing, you know, we're going into the natural product stores and right. this is the new innovation we're bringing in there. It was, I mean, all aspects of it, even to how we run a team, how our customer service communicates, like everything. So I think it's just be so open to learning, be like a sponge and be proactive. So, you know, I think we got a lot out of the program. I think everybody got a lot out of the program, but we mm-hmm. really mined the Mondelez network. So we asked every week to get connected to different people, even if it was like, right, we're not really talking, you know, at the beginning of the summer, we weren't working on new flavors or anything then, but let's have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And they're there to support you. And it's not an inconvenience. You've got a mm-hmm. finite amount of time. So even if it feels like a big time commitment, just milk it.
Yeah. Okay. That's really great advice. Kind of going back to the brand a little bit, or your story around the brand, is there a moment in time where you felt like you were headed in the right direction?
Yes. There's been like, I'm trying to think, there's like been like lots of moments. And I think just the way that we approach a lot of things is, we like to crawl before we walk, before we run. And it's like in that, like always looking for like proof of concept. Mm-hmm. And I think like just the biggest moment of like, okay, we're onto something here and it's starting to pick up is when you get those customer messages that are like people all over the country that have just discovered your product and like, that like we've like change their lives, people who can't eat corn, people who are avoiding things and are so excited by it. And I'm like, these aren't people that know me. These aren't people in my extended network through LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. That this is like actual consumers in the marketplace are like validating what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the validation we need to keep moving forward and creating products for those people.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of any moments, kind of like the flip side of that question a little bit is, do you have any moments where you were like, huh, wish we would have known that beforehand, or that was a bad decision, like anything that was pivotal? And, you know, I know that in starting a business, because me and my business partner, we run a business as well. And you have those little moments, but every once in a while you'll have like almost like an epiphany that was forced upon you based off of some interesting choices, as I like to say. But do you have any of those that you're like, okay, if anybody can learn from this, this, you know, anything like that to share?
Yeah, I think it's like, I knew this going into it, but still didn't fully know it going into it, was the cost of doing business in retail. Okay. And being very, very selective of who your retail partners are, where you spend your trade spend, because it's really attractive and exciting to have a new listing and have a new account. Mm-hmm. And they all want my products. This is great, but it's not necessarily the right place. And you as a brand actually often take on more risk than the account
than
does.
They do, or yes.
The distributor.
Yes.
And, you know, I think we've been in sticky situations with accounts that were not the right account. We were too early for that. We spent a lot of money in trying to make something work. And it's kind of like fitting a square peg into a round hole sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, looking back on it, and so much of what we learned with Mondelez, that this whole challenging the status quo in route to market is like, we're looking at a lot of different alternative channels and how we actually like vet and make sure that they are the right retail partner. And I suppose it's like a good position to be in where we are turning down certain accounts because we know that's not right. But if I knew it before, but if I had listened to it before, we would have saved a lot of money and a lot of headache.
Yeah. I think we were talking about this before the call about something completely different, but knowing something academically, but then actually living it are two separate situations. And so you can go, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. I need to go in with the right partners, blah, blah, blah. And then something happens. And then you're like, oh, that's what that means.
Now I get it. Now I get it tens of thousands of dollars later.
Yes. Are there, do you, so, you know, advice for startup, small brands, what does that mean when you say, know what your right partners are? Do you, have you identified them? Do you have a matrix that you use? Is it still somewhat of a gut instinct? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So the way that we've like shifted our mindset and how we approach it is more on not necessarily the customer, as in like, this is an affluent neighborhood and this, there are lots of moms that have two children and things like that. We actually think of it as more as a snacking occasion. So is it a place that people go for that snacking occasion? So we are not the snack that you're going to put a big bowl of popcorn and chips out at your child's birthday party with 20 children there. We're fifth of the size, and that would be the messiest, most inconvenient product for a mother to put out. So a lot of times places that have majority, what we would call a commodity set, which is popcorn, chips, and pretzels, and not much beyond that, that's not really where we're going to do well.
Okay.
Our customer and consumer who loves our product is looking for something that they want to keep snacking on, something that's going to be low calorie, not damaging to their health, like just to entertain their taste buds and mouth. It is not a meal replacement. It's not hold me over until then. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I got to keep pushing through work and I just want something to distract me, or I want something like fun to like eat after dinner that's not damaging to my health. And it's when we're looking at different retail accounts and different channels, it's okay, is that customer going there? If they are going there, is this what they're looking for? And does the retailer have this type of snacking set where they have alternative snacks or a gluten-free set that also has snacks in it? So, you know, I very transparently say to a lot of retail accounts that we talk to is this is not going to work everywhere. And like, let's discuss and think about like where this would go, that it's not popcorn replacement, put it next to popcorn. Like, how can we get creative in whether it's check stand, gluten-free sets, even like people use our product as a topping. Can it be in the ice cream aisle, in a shelf rack, things like that. So what helps, especially, you know, we don't know every retailer in and out, is are they a partner that's willing to talk about things and get creative and have some skin in the game in saying this is innovation and we are going to work together to make this work, versus like a plug and play for another SKU of popcorn.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing is retailers and distributors actually value that type of input because no buyer, no merchandiser, no distributor is interested in bringing on a product that you as a brand owner know isn't going to give them velocity. Yeah. You are saving them a step. And actually by telling them that you're not a good fit for them, become a more valuable brand in their minds. Because then when you do come back and say, we're ready for you now, they know that it's time. And I think there's a lot of learning to be done for that on brands at all levels. Now, you know, when you're a multinational and you own the distribution chain and the placement, it's a little bit of a different story. But for the rest of the brands on the planet that can't pay to play and have to be strategic about their placement and can't do buybacks, et cetera, being really honest with yourself or don't want to do it an aggressive high-low strategy or X, Y, and Z. I mean, there's a number of different ways to look at it. But being really honest with yourself about who your brand is and isn't and what is going to work for you is so smart. It's such good business. And I think it's awesome that you've already crashed into that. Like, that's great learning to have early on. I know that sounds crazy, but it is great learning to have early on.
Yeah. And I think just like kind of like going back to like crawl, walk, and then run. It's yeah. like, how can we make these mistakes on the smallest level and that costs us the least amount?
Right.
And someone once told me, and I thought this is really funny, is the difference of raising $100 million and $100,000 is you're going to make the same mistake and one's going to cost you $100,000 and one's going to cost you $100,000.
Absolutely. Yep. Make mistakes quickly. Yes. We are huge fans of that. Like, do them iteratively, boom, 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 like try something. I think it really requires a little bit. Maybe that's the race car driver side of you that is allows you to kind of go, okay, well, let's do 2%. Now do 5%. Like, you know, because as a race car driver, in order to be successful, you have to kind of test what you can do and what your machine can do. And that's what you're doing with your business. So I think that's really brilliant insight to have so early on in your brand.
And I think it's uncomfortable too. Like, I think it's actually painful and uncomfortable to like face those fast truths.
Yeah.
Where I see a lot of founder friends, and I've even done it in times of like just keep pushing, and like keeping pushing is not really the way. And I'm actually reading a book right now called The Dip, and it's talking about like, you know, have you read The Dip?
No, I've heard of it though. Mm-hmm.
But it's great. It's like all these like fast learnings in this dip, and like the dip is like that we really have to push through. But in the dip, it's figuring out when you quit and when you keep going.
Yes.
And in like each little like small scenario that we've had of like, okay, this account's not working, when do we push through and when do we like quit the task at hand or quit what we're doing? Which it's not a negative thing of like failing, but it's actually like far better to like stop the spending, stop, you know, burning resources, both human and financial.
Yep.
And go on to the next thing.
Yeah, agreed. And I think especially for young brands, which, you know, your first 5 years are when brands may sometimes up to 10 years, it just depends on what kind of traction you get. But those first 5 years, I think the desire to win is so high that sometimes founder owners or brand owners are blind to the fact that there needs to be sometimes at times more kind of knocks on the chin than not in order to make sure that you're course correcting. Like wins don't always equate to long-term growth.
Right. And I think, you know, with LinkedIn and social media, like, you know, I know there's so much about body image on Instagram and things like that, but I think there's founder image, and it's like, that's really hard where like, you know, I'm always making sure if I'm like speaking in something like this, that like we have made mistakes, and like, it's not a highlight reel all the time. And I think it's really hard with like on the note of wins that looks like everybody's winning all the time. And like for every one win that we have, I think we've like fallen out of a tree 10 times.
Yeah. So. That's, That's valuable. Thank you for sharing that. So on that note, well, what is your proudest moment so far? And it could be about your brand. It could be about you as a leader in the career that you're driving.
Yeah, I think the proudest moment I've had is like actually like right now with the team that I've built. Like I am very, very proud of the people I've surrounded myself with, who I've recruited, like transparently have made bad hires in the past. And that's taken a lot of learning, especially being a pretty young founder. Hiring people a lot older than I am most of the time. And just like, I'm proud of like what I've done to get there. And I'm also proud of them. And, you know, setting a lot of structure up in the company, even though we're a small team, there's three of us on payroll and we work with an amazing PR agency and, you know, other external partners, but really vetted them, really built trust. And like, I'm so proud that like, I can be on a flight or I can be on vacation for a few days. And like, I have a company that can not entirely run itself, but like really run itself. It is not all on me anymore. Yeah. And they are a force, like such remarkable people that I want to spend my days with, yes, that are fun to be with. And yes, also I can trust and just so brilliant and one step ahead.
That's awesome. That is also a testament to who you are, because at a brand as young as yours, you're almost 4 years, right?
3 years since we incorporated, since I like properly started building it.
Yeah. To be able to say that you can walk away from the business for a few days, I don't know that I can do that. And my business partner and I have been working together since 2006. So, you know, part of that is I'm a workaholic and I get a little pride in that, but other parts is that I have not done a great job building my team and my system to be strong enough to operate when I'm not around. Now, of course, I'm going to school, so I'm really learning how to do that. But some people like yourselves have a kind of an instinctual leadership understanding, and some of us have to like learn it a different way. So I think that is something you should be proud of. It says a lot about who you are. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think the reason why I am so proud of it is because it's not always been that way. And like, I naturally am a workaholic and have put like a lot of structure in my life and making sure my team does not work all the time, because at the end of the day, when I like look at things, what's the biggest risk to the company right now? Sure, there's risk exposure with distributors, yada, 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 but is any one of us burning out?
Yes.
And that will cost the entire company.
Yes.
And if I don't respond to someone in 24 hours, that's not as bad as if all of us are out for the count.
Yeah. That is some really fierce insight. Like, you really have the wisdom of somebody who's been working in the industry for decades. Genuinely, if you've not heard that before, and I hope that you have, but you genuinely do have wisdom that a lot of people can learn from, with regardless of organizational size. It's really wonderful to hear. Yeah. So what's next for Chasing Dreams Farm? What's next?
I know it's a mouthful.
It is.
So the most immediate next for us is we are launching into food service. So I can now say that we have a food by contract with Compass Group.
Oh my goodness. That's fantastic.
Super exciting. And we actually, Compass Group reached out to us January 2020, and then the world shut down. So this has been a long time
making. Coming.
So really focusing on business and industry with the relaunch of offices coming in January, also colleges and universities. So that's super exciting for us. And then the pops are just the beginning. Like I said, we're creating a brand platform. We do not want to be a one-trick pony.
Great.
So starting to look at innovation beyond the pops within the snacking category.
Yeah.
Sticking to better for you and more fun for you.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, Sydney, I'm really enjoying our conversation. Our time is starting to wrap up, and there's some questions that I'd like to ask every guest. So I want to roll into them. Is that okay?
Let's do it.
All right. Tell me, can you share a kind of an interesting fact about your products? Maybe something that people wouldn't know about either sorghum or maybe the process of popping them that would be something that I could take to a little happy hour.
Yes, this is always a fun fact. Okay. The hole doesn't attach, so it doesn't get caught in your teeth.
Oh, okay. That's pretty awesome. I like that. Can you, then you can eat them plain?
I mean, technically you could. It wouldn't be very good. Are you saying to eat the kernels plain?
Yeah. No, I mean like pop with no flavoring on, maybe butter or salt. You can eat them just like that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because I think all the samples, thank you, that you sent our way all have like had really yummy flavors to them. And yes. I'm always curious what the product tastes like, kind of unadulterated.
So I guess I can share one other thing about the product.
Okay.
Through the process, which makes our product super unique, is that we air pop the sorghum and then lightly coat it with that super thin crunchy coating made out of tapioca syrup. So you get like a two layers of crunch. So
I love that.
It's crunchy and, you know, on its own, but it adds a little bit more complexity to it.
So my next question is, are there any women leaders or rising stars out in our industry, well, industry or not, that you would like to elevate or simply admire for the work that they're doing right now? And if so, who, why? Like, what is it about them?
I think one of our biggest inspirations is our investor, Kathleen King, the founder of Tate's Bake Shop. She is just an incredible person that has led with a female heart, is so kind and gentle and beautiful soul, but also hugely intuitive, and has got a great business mind, and like so inspired by like just being a wonderful person while also being a wonderful business leader.
I love that. Okay, awesome. And then what brands or trends do you have your eye on and why outside of your own product category?
Outside of ancient grains.
You could, if you've got some other ancient grains that you got your eye on, I'm down with hearing what that is as well.
I think on the note of flavors, I think like we are always watching flavor trends and how we can take our product and combine it with that trend versus looking at another trend and another product and going after that. And there's like definitely a lot of interesting trends in like a lot of like spicy flavors, different types of spicy.
Okay.
Flavors.
Okay. All right. Well, we have been talking with Chidney. Listen to me. what's in my tea this morning? I like to know. Okay. Well, we've been talking with Sydney Chasen, the founder of Chasen Dreams Farm. Sydney, where can people learn more about you?
ChasenDreamsFarm.com and on Instagram at Chasen_dreams_farm.
Love it. Well, Sydney, I want to thank you so much for your time today and the work that you're doing. I'm really excited about hearing more about sorghum and kind of elevating these ancient grains and kind of especially the regenerative component of it, because I'm really deep into the environmental component of what food can be doing right now. I'm also excited to see what you guys tackle next. And I'm really glad that we got to connect today. So thank you again for the samples. Our staff devoured them. Literally, they were gone in an afternoon. If you didn't hear from us, you're hearing from me right now about that.
Thank you.
So thank you for your time and have a great rest of your day, everyone. I'll catch you next time.
Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.